So in the second reading, St. Paul ends up rejoicing in his weaknesses. I don't think that's something most of us are comfortable with. I am not comfortable with it. But since we all have them, it's interesting to look at this. Even Jesus in the gospel has weaknesses. He is limited in what he can do for these people. You know, Jesus spent 30 years in Nazareth. He was led a very circumspect life. You know, some of the apocryphal gospels that were out there showed Jesus making clay pigeons, and he'd bless them and they'd fly away as a child. If he did any of those things, people in Nazareth would not have been surprised in him coming back. You know, at the age of 30, he goes out, and what he had done for them was he had built, as a carpenter, he was a tecton, a construction worker. He didn't just work in wood. There isn't much wood in the Holy Land. Only wealthy people used a lot of wood. But he would have worked in brick and stone and masonry and probably odd jobs for people in the town and in Caesarea Philippi, which was nearby, a large Roman construction project. They watched him work with his hands. Very muscular individual, no doubt. And then he goes off and he comes back a few months later with a bunch of disciples. That means people who did this were rabbis. They know he never went to rabbinic school. They knew he was an ordinary individual. They knew him as the local handyman. And, of course, he has a very appealing discourse. We know he's God. But they looked at him and they said, who does he think he is? Isn't he just the carpenter? Isn't he the son of Mary? Notice Joseph is either dead or they're making a subtle reference to the fact that he was born conceived out of wedlock. If they knew that, it could be a put down. Usually you weren't known as son of your mother. It was Jesus bar Joseph. So it's an interesting conversation. They knew him, so they put him in a box and they threw him out. But Jesus's weakness is his strength. The fact that he was one of us, that he died on a cross. When somebody's suffering, we know that God is with us. That our suffering, though we don't understand its meaning in full, we know that Christ was one of us. He really went through a great deal in his 33 years on earth. And we relate to him by his wounds. It's wonderful that he rose from the dead, but we relate to him because he suffered. And this is what St. Paul is saying in the second reading. It's something I prayed about deeply when I was young. And it still is amazing what Paul is saying. He's saying, well, you know, I was taken up to the seventh heaven. This is right before this part of the reading. And I saw things which I cannot describe, he tells the Second Corinthians, in 2 Corinthians. And then he says, well, but to keep me from getting too puffed up with pride, I was given this angel of Satan to beat me. So he realizes that it's the evil one or evil attacking him, but it's God that's permitting it. So here's a theological thing. We have, all of us struggle with difficulties. Sometimes it's an attack from the outside. Sometimes we brought it on ourselves. But it is God that permits it. And Paul knows this. And he begs God, he says, take this away. I need this for my ministry. He prays three times. That means he prayed a lot. And who else in the New Testament prays three times and does not have his prayer answered? Christ in Gethsemane. He says, Father, take this cup away from me. You can do anything. And this was the answer that the Father gave Jesus. So St. Paul gets a similar answer. You get the impression Paul's not real happy about this. How do I know that? He keeps asking, Lord, thank you for answering my prayer. That's not really what I want. I'm going to ask again. But we had, as I said at the beginning of Mass, one of the things we did, in addition to seeing my aunt, she's got vascular dementia, and only about a third of her is still, you know, cognizant. So it was a really good visit. But in between there, they had an ecumenical tour of churches. And having just built this one, I came away with all these wonderful ideas that we can't afford to put any in. if only I'd seen this first. But in between there, it was really interesting. You know, we have nothing on these other churches, but it was an interesting tour. But I was remembering another building I saw in France. When I was a deacon, I went to France on my own for my deacon retreat, and I just because I worked for an airline, I had ways to do this. And one of the places I went to was, of course, Notre Dame in Paris. But right next door to it is a little chapel. I say little, it's taller than this, but it's little compared to the Gothic churches of France, called La Sainte-Chapelle. Has anybody here been to La Sainte-Chapelle? 2, 3, 5. What'd you think? Isn't it beautiful? It is the best example of upright Gothic architecture that emphasizes windows anywhere in the world. It has the thinnest bezel, to talk in modern terms. It's almost all windows. If you're interested in what it looks like, I put it in my column in the bulletin. It's no longer a chapel. It's been turned into a museum. It originally housed the Crown of Thorns. And so when you go in there, it's just incredible because it's all light. You wonder, how did they do this? It doesn't even have a lot of flying buttresses. In the early Gothic churches, they're almost all thick, blocky walls with thin windows. And the goal that they had was to get as much light as possible. Remember when we were building this and we took a survey, the thing that got the most votes was, we want windows. Behold, right? Sometimes we have too many windows, but we got windows. So the goal was more and more windows. But you know what? The more openings in the building, the weaker the structure is. It needs to be buttressed as it goes higher. And a good example is this building. We have pictures of it under every phase of construction. But at one point, you have the arches, the roof, and no walls. All you have is one or two of these beams. But the roof is held up by the slanted ones. The windows are not really holding up anything. And this is a window, by its very nature, is weak. But without that window, you'd have no light in the building. It would be a dead building. In the same way, I came away from that, and then as now, the insight that God gave me there was that the beauty of a soul is its windows. God wants to shine out from you and me, and the best way he does that is through our weaknesses. When I am weak, or when you are weak, it gives God a chance to shine. If I'm so strong that I don't need God, I'm not even going to invite him in my building. I can do it all myself, Lord. I've got all the resources I need. But if I'm weak, I'm suffering from a terminal illness, I've got a financial reversal, I have some issue I can't deal with. I was with relatives yesterday and one of them bugs me. Anybody have that happen? No? Boy, what a great group we've got here. But, you know, we find ourselves in situations that we simply don't have answers. And God permits us to live with this. St. Paul either had an eye problem. At one point at the Galatians, he says, you would gladly have taken your eye out and given it to me if only you could have. Or a false brother. There were lots of people that betrayed him in almost each letter. He was beaten up and stoned and all these other things, shipwrecked. Maybe he had a physical problem as a result of these trials he went through. He says he didn't preach well according to his own readings. So something like this he felt was essential for ministry, and God did not take it away. I had laryngitis for 30 years. I kept saying, Lord, I need to speak. And he says, you talk too much. It 30 years I went through that. But God worked through it. Every time I needed to take a rest, God sent somebody else to come in. And it was a blessing. And so these weaknesses are our strengths. If we allow God to work through them, this is what attracts us to God, and it's what attracts us to others, what we've been through. The fact that we don't have on earth, God is building us a church that in heaven, the windows will be where God shines for all eternity through that which God did with us. The things we did for ourselves are like block walls. That's not what it's about. It was interesting coming home from Chicago. You know, I always pray for a good seat. I pray for a quiet seatmate, but I didn't get it on the way home. I got a very talkative 14-year-old next to me. So I got out my trusty earphones after about an hour. I put on my headset, and that usually takes care of it. Not in this case. He'd lift up the earphone and say, "You still there?" So anyway, he had an interesting story because his family had been, his flight had been canceled, and these family members were put on 3 different flights. And here he is in the middle seat, a 14-year-old, traveling alone. And, you know, and I said, you have been very inconvenienced. And he said, yeah, well, what can you do? That's life. So I was saying, they were passing out these video things that they use on Alaska Airlines now for watching movies, and they charge something in coach. And I said, why don't you tell the stewardess what happened to you? I know she'll give it to you for nothing. He had no money. And he said, oh, I don't want to take advantage. I thought, man, this kid's going to be a priest or a pastor or something. He was so holy. And I said, I'll do it for you. I used to work for an airline. I said, I know that they can't wait to help you. You know, they want you to come back. And so he said, no, you know what, I'll do it. So I looked over when she passed over. He just mentioned that he had been inconvenienced. And they gave him a meal, and they gave him his headset, and they gave him this video thing. And I had 4 blessed hours of peace. Praise God. But, you know, actually, it was his weakness that brought us together, didn't it? The fact that he was inconvenienced gave the stewardess a chance to help him. It gave me a chance to engage him and help him with my own talents from the past. And this is how God operates. And maybe he learned something for his whole life. You know, by being kind to someone, you get more than yelling and screaming about my rights. You know, not that that's wrong to do that, but sometimes it's a little kindness goes a long way. Who knows what that little incident might do to change this young man's life. And, you know, God is working constantly through the inconveniences, the things that come up in each day. And, you know, so Jesus himself is powerless, in a sense, in this gospel. Nobody has faith in him, so he feels he cannot do a miracle for these people. Sometimes he can't do a miracle for us because we're so strong, we don't want to let him in. I can do it myself, Lord. I don't need you to forgive me in confession. I don't need to forgive this person. I'm strong in the way I am. I don't need you to help me get through my life. I know exactly what I'm doing. Thank you very much. And God can't get in. But when we don't have the resources, this is when God is glorified the most, because he puts in the money that we don't have. All he wants is the little bit of coins that we have to offer him, and he does the rest. So this is just a spiritual principle. It's one of my favorite readings, that second reading of St. Paul. I found it so operative in my life. God will answer sometimes every single prayer we ask except one. But in that one is our salvation. The thing we have to struggle with all our lives is that which God is most glorified by, even in the failures of life. You know, so we just pray that God will help us to recognize our weaknesses, to let him, the construction worker, the carpenter, build our church with him.